James Allison, and I work with Angela Taylor and Mike Jones at Oxford. And principally, I've been working on pointed CBI 2 observations of SF clusters. Our work's in collaboration with Scott Kerr at Manchester, who's been providing us with some simulations. And we also work closely with John Sievers, Steve Myers, Brian Mason, Dick Bond, and the rest of the CBI team, some of whom are in the audience today. Okay, so CBI 2 is an upgrade, essentially, of the CBI 1 instrument. I won't say too much about it, because Angela Taylor's going to be speaking about that in a revisement to the schedule later. Essentially, the upshot is that the dishes are larger, 1.4 meter dishes, which means that although we're essentially looking, we have greater sensitivity on the longest baselines. So here you can see this is at 30 gigahertz. This is the real visibility component of a simulated observation of CBI 2, real visibility against baseline. The error bars are, so the short error bars are the instrument noise, and the longer error bars include CMD primordial component. And so for CBI 1, which observed in configuration down here, the CMB component was a pretty strong component. So we've kind of tried to move to longer baselines, but with greater sensitivity. And we're an interferometer, so we fit to the visibilities. OK, so CBI 2, essentially, our observations target the outer skirts of galaxy clusters. So if you look at these maps, these are real observations, which Angela will show more of later. You can see this is our beam. And this is the SF decrement. So we're really resolving the outer skirts of the galaxy cluster. And we're hoping that basically the SZ will provide a good constraint on the gas out to the visual radius. So at the moment, we're essentially looking at clusters in the redshift range between 1.1 and 0.3. And we're hoping to basically combine these with X-ray data, which we have some published X-ray data, in order to gain a hold on cluster gas properties and their mass. OK, so yeah, we chose to observe some known X-ray clusters. So our samples included the Reflex DXL sample at redshift 0.3, which is essentially now a subsample of the LOCUS sample, which was presented yesterday, scaling relations for yesterday by the SZA guys. We also looked at the ReXS sample, which is a
low redshift
sample. OK, and as part of my PhD, I've essentially been working on the Reflex DXL sample. So we're performing a joint analysis of the CBI2 asset data with published X-ray data. We currently have X-ray surface brightness data and from X-Men Newton observations. And that provides a powerful constraint on the electron density in the inner regions of the cluster. Essentially, our pipeline can also include spectral X-ray if we wish to include that. OK. So I'm going to talk about essentially our analysis. So we've been trying to develop a model we're essentially trying to develop a model, an improvement upon the isothermal beta model, in which we can try and reproduce the observed temperature profile. So I've just given a selection of temperature profiles from various X-ray samples, so yeah, from Pratt et al., Jiang et al., and Vickinen et al. And clearly, you know, isothermal beta model doesn't reproduce the observed temperature profile, so you need some flexibility in the temperature. Okay, so the first thing we tried was, okay, you can try keeping the beta model description for the density, the electron density, and introduce some sort of arbitrary parameterization of the temperature profile. You could try the parameterization by Hallman's law 2007. So the problem with this really is you haven't encoded some basic physical principles into your model from the beginning. So you could, if you did this, end up with some pretty crazy profiles, things like the derived mass, the hydrostatic mass. So you see here, I basically put in, this is very simple, I just put in some sort of typical value. So it's quite a steep temperature profile, but it's within the one sigma error that Hallman's law found in his simulations. And basically, you can end up with, you know, there, it is possible within the model to get enclosed mass at Oxford radius. So it's sort of clearly unphysical. So we developed a model essentially which had all these problems removed, so the physics was actually constrained, hard programmed in from the beginning. So the choice of our model was essentially we'd start off with assuming there's a dark matter halo, we include a sort of standard NFW prescription. So enclosed mass parameterized by this. And so essentially in our fitting, we fit for the concentration parameter and R200. And the important thing about our model is we actually don't give a parameterization for the electron temperature and the density. We essentially parameterize the entropy. So we take the fact that we know that there could be an entropy flaw at small radii, as have been observed and from simulations, and we include a power law at large radii. So it's very similar to a bit like a beta model inverse for entropy. Okay, and we fit for the power law and for the core radius, which essentially tells you how big your entropy floor is. Okay, and then the other assumption, of course, is when we combine SL and X-ray observations, if we want to get mass back, we have to assume hydrostatic equilibrium. And so we essentially put these parameterizations into the equation for pressure and solve the pressure, the hydrostatic equilibrium equation. And we solve this numerically, so we integrate from the center to large radii. So at every radius, we can m is given by the dark matter component squared by NFW, and we include the baryonic component, which is essentially just the electron density integrated over the volume times constant. Okay, just to summarize for the modeling, so we do joint fits to CBI2 and X-ray surface brightness. We parameterize the dark matter and the entropy, and our three parameters are essentially central electron density, central electron temperature, core radius for the entropy, the entropy power law, alpha, concentration, and R200. And we can also fit for position as well if we wish. Okay, so in our analysis pipeline, we essentially take a Bayesian inference approach. So we invoke Bayes' theorem, we calculate the likelihood for the SZ and X-ray components, and then we maximize the posterior given reasonable priors for the various parameters that we fit for. Okay, so for calculating the SZ likelihood, our data is essentially the gridded visibilities. So these are the same gridded visibilities that John mentioned in his CBI1 CMD talk. So I won't go into too much more detail on that. And we essentially, our model produces an estimate of these gridded visibilities, which we then compare in the likelihood statistic. Now, of course, for SZ interferometric observations, the covariance matrix is non-diagonal. There's correlation between errors in the CMD component. So we have to use the full description of the likelihood. So we have the noise component from the instrument in the atmosphere, CMD primordial fluctuations. We also have a covariance matrix for our sources. So we could either subtract source flux from known sources, or we could project them out. But Angela will talk more about that later in her talk with real data. In our simulations, we don't put sources at some point. Okay. For the X-ray likelihood, we're essentially just fitting to Rayleigh binned X-ray counts. So we're essentially just fitting to the published surface brightness profiles from the Reflex DXL paper. And the errors on this one correlated, so this first just collapsed to the chi-square calculation. Okay, and then so the total likelihood is the product of these two likelihood components. And so we essentially estimate the posterior distribution. So we use a MCMC engine called BASIS, where you start off exploring the prior space, and then there's a cooling factor in there, so eventually you end up you end up essentially exploring the posterior space after a burn-in period. Okay. And the power of this is you end up essentially with a series of samples or in parameters in posterior space, the number density of which should map out the posterior distribution. And you can marginalize over these samples and get posterior distributions for the parameter values and for all the important quantities that you want to know about the galaxy clusters. Okay, and also from this code, we also can calculate the evidence as well. So if we wish, we could actually perform a comparative qualitative analysis for various models for stored data. Okay, so essentially each sample that we get out of BASIS defines a series of cluster profiles, right? Because our parameters uniquely define various profiles. And we can essentially obtain from our samples profiles as a function of radius. So here's an example of some profiles that we get. I'll explain these later. But essentially, you can see we get probability distributions for the profiles. So essentially, the slices through here are just individual histograms. So the dark line is 1 sigma. Slightly lighter gray is 2 sigma. And I don't know if you can see it on there, but there's a 3 sigma one, which is even lighter. So yeah, we have entropy slope, entropy core, entropy scaling. So n naught, T naught over n naught to the 2/3. So the central entropy value. Yeah, and then we have the two NFW concentration and R2 concentration. Yeah, I mean, yes, I believe so. But then the S naught is degenerate into T naught and N naught because your N naught is constrained by X-rays and T naught is by the combination of X-rays and X-rays. Sorry, what H? Sorry. This is from a simulation, so it's not a. But we assume a cosmology little h 0.7. Yeah, this is with the cosmology assumed, so it's already in there. We don't use a little. We don't have any explicit little h parameterization. Need quite a few. I think this is of order 1,000. Yeah. Do you mean to get a nice smooth estimate of the posterior? Yeah, I mean we use. Yeah, sure. We do have actual data, and Angela's going to be talking about that in the next talk. It's just we rescheduled everything, so I was going to be talking about CBI2 data as well, but that's what Angela's talking about. So I'm just talking about this. Okay, so we test our model based on simulated observations. So we've taken simulations from KFL 2004. These are n-body hydrodynamical simulations. In that, they assume a lambda CDN cosmology of omega m 0.3, omega lambda 0.7, little h 0.7. And this is performed using version 2 of the gadget code. So in that, they're testing out a feedback gas model. So essentially, the cluster is allowed to lose energy by radiative cooling. Once the gas has cooled down to an arbitrary temperature value, they then switch off the cooling and they allow, I think they select a fraction of the cooled gas to then go on to form stars and the rest to be reheated by the stars. Okay, and their approach is essentially phenomenological, so they try and reproduce the observed LXT relation and the observed excess entropy in clusters. But we chose this, I mean, it doesn't really matter too much, we just chose this essentially as trying to choose a realistic set of clusters just to test our analysis model on. Okay, so from the sample of 15 simulated clusters, we chose two moderately massive ones that would be typical of the sort of clusters at the lower sort of limit being able to observe by CBI2. So first cluster, feedback 1, is a relaxed core cluster, and FP3, slightly different. It's a non-core core cluster, and it's had a recent merger event in its lifetime at redshift 0.4. And here's some values for these two. So this is integrated Y. So that's spherical Y up to R200, M total up to R200, and F gaps up So you can see these clusters have similar global properties, but their physics is different. Their profiles are different. Okay, and we've taken, so essentially we've produced observables from these simulated clusters. So this is, first of all, this is the X-ray surface brightness map for each cluster in flux units, and the SZ delta T for each cluster. So we take the X-ray surface, sorry. I didn't get it on there. Do you mean for the X-ray surface brightness? Oh gosh, it's about, I don't know if I've got these values with me. I think it's something like milli-K, but I'm not 100% sure. I think it's something like that. Yeah, I just can't remember the exact values. No, it might be less than that, actually. Okay. So the X-ray surface brightness, we take those simulated maps, and we convert them to counts per pixel based on a typical generic X-ray instrument, such as the EPIC camera. So we just take that map, we multiply by this factor here, that's the X-ray surface brightness, and the solid angle in the pixel, and we get out counts per pixel, and we choose a neutral hydrogen condensity of 10 to the 20 and integration time of 10 milliseconds. And also, we're simulating observation in the 0.5 to 2 kV band using Raymond-Smith plasma model. Okay, so we now have a counts map, which we apply Poisson statistics to get a simulation of a real counts map. Now, the X-ray data that's available to us from the reflex sample is actually radio binned, so we simulate that, and we just take our counts map, do the radial binning. Now, we bin it such that in all but the very center of the cluster, the number of samples that go into each bin is greater than 100. So we essentially assume that we can apply Gaussian statistics to the surface brightness profiles. Okay, and these are the simulated surface brightness profiles for three clusters. Okay, for our CBI2 SZ signal, we take the delta T maps and we convert them for each frequency channel CBI2, so 10 frequency channels. We convert them each to sky brightness using the Planck equation. We also include essentially the fact that there is some frequency dependence on for the SZ temperature. But it's pretty much negligible. I mean, so CBI observes between 26 and 36 gigahertz, and the difference across that is pretty much negligible. Okay, and we also take realizations to CMB sky and add those to our SZ map. We multiply that by the CBI2 primary beam. We take the Fourier transform. We take a typical sampling function for a 30-hour observation with CBI2. And we also we assume sort of typical system temperatures and atmosphere, and we system efficiency, and we apply some noise to that. We also actually simulate the fact that with CBI2 and CBI1 observations, we do ground signal subtraction. So we have to observe fields in the sky that are relatively free of sources either side. And subtract them, average of that from our cluster maps in order to remove the ground signal that might have leaked into the main cluster field. Into the data. Okay, and the effect of that is essentially to increase our CMB uncertainty, the primordial component in the uncertainty by a factor of the square root of 3/2 for two reference field subtraction. Okay, and this is two images of our simulated observations. So I'd just like to point out the contours on here are 2 sigma on the noise level. Okay, so these are results of our simulation tests. So we fit both the isothermal beta model and our model to the gridded CBI2 visibilities. So here is a result of that fit. So again, the grayscale is the same one sigma, two sigma, three sigma as before. See, both pretty good fits. Sorry, FB1 is a cool, relaxed cluster, and FB3 is a non-cool core, and it had a merger event at 0.7, sorry, 0.4, register 0.4. Okay, we also fit, this is the results of the fit to the X-ray surface brightness profiles. So you can see that, so I'd just like to point out, actually, this is a problem we're coming across. It's the cause of the X-ray data. So essentially, we were having the problem with FB1, that it has this huge peak in X-ray surface brightness in the core, and we couldn't get a good fit, because our model is the X-ray data is significantly more sensitive than the CBI data. So we're having this problem where it was fitting this kind of substructure in the middle, this very spiked core, and so we actually took a core cut in the FB1 model. With FB3, there's actually a flattening of the core, because basically the peak in surface brightness in the FB3 core is offset from the cluster centroid because of this merger event. So in fact, I've shown the results from fitting the core, but in fact we don't have to do that, and I don't think it makes any difference to the fits if we don't include the core for FB3. Okay. And you can see for the isothermal beta model, it explicitly puts a flattening of the surface brightness in the center of FB1 because it's a parameterization of the model. Okay, so here are the profiles we get out. So this is for temperature. So you can see that we reproduce temperature profiles with our model. So this is the core cluster and the non-core cluster, and of course the isothermal model. This is for entropy. So I'd like to point out actually that the dashed line is a simulation, true simulation value. Total mass. So we don't. One thing we don't quite agree in the center, but at large radii, both models actually agree. Sorry. No, this is something I wanted to investigate actually. Yeah. It could be something that we could change something like the model to sort that out. Okay, and F gas. You can see there's pretty good agreement between our model and the true F gas values. And you can see also that there is convergence to a value at large radii. Okay, and then we have the histograms for the global values. So what's interesting is, in fact, while the isothermal beta model for CBI observations actually doesn't do that bad a job at reproducing the global values, it doesn't do a very good job, obviously, of reproducing the observed profiles. It just goes out forever in the first instance. But these global values are measured out for R200. So this is the integrated Y parameter out to the simulation R200. So this is the Y calculated from integrating the pressure over the spherical volume rather than the column integrated Y. Total mass, that's R200. The F gas value. Okay, so, sorry. I wasn't saying that they couldn't. Sorry. Yes. Yes. Well, we do have data at R200. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we get much better constraints at R5. You mean the widths? I believe so. I mean, we can go back to these. profiles, you can see there is a widening of the distribution. Yeah, you're right. We could work with R500. In fact, Angela's going to be showing some fitting to real data at R500. Well, we don't, it depends on our how long we've integrated on the cluster, but we don't include the spectral X-ray information, so we can only constrain these parameters by combine X-ray and assert, right? Is that what you're saying? What do you mean in real observations to improve? If we had, Angela will again be showing some plots, but basically, it depends if your spectral temperature values aren't very good, then yeah, we could improve with long integrations from C30. And I assume at larger radii as well, actually, because obviously there's no X-ray data on there. Okay, right, so yeah, total mass and F-gas, right. Okay, so yeah, the one issue at the moment that I'm having with this model is that, of course, we've assumed hydrostatic equilibrium, and clearly, the two simulated clusters, I actually haven't put them on, but this is FB1 and FB3. We've just plotted here the pressure gradient against the right-hand side of the hydrostatic equilibrium equation, the gravity components, and you can see that they're not in agreement in the cores of the clusters. So the issue is, should we cut the X-ray core, and by how much? And that's something I've been having difficulty recently. It's how much do you cut the core in the X-ray data? How much information do you throw away from that? Okay. Well, to be honest, this is from a simulation, so I have to go and look at that paper. But I assume that this is a. Which one? FB1. This is a product of the fact that it's a core cluster. So the cooling in the middle is removed, the thermal pressure support. Of this cluster. And this cluster is interesting because this is FB3. So this has a non-core core, but it's undergone a recent merger event. So I assume maybe that's disrupted the gas in some way or something. Sorry? In this cluster, I'm not sure. I'd have to go and look at it's not my simulation, so yeah. That's true, but the temperature isn't down in the core of this cluster. Sorry, for this plot. The clump, so the offset from the centroid of the cluster is, it is definitely in this region. Yeah. Oh, hi.
Okay.
Right, okay, so yeah, just to summarize. So, I mean, CBI2 has observed a significant sample of known X-ray clusters, and we can probe the cluster gas out to the larger scales. And as already been pointed out, it'd be good to have X-ray data out there as well. That's sensitive enough. We've developed this sort of very simple analytical model to try and improve upon the isothermal beta model with three principal components. So we parameterize the dark matter component by the NFW. We use a simple gas entropy parameterization where we have explicitly an isentropic floor, which can go away if your fit gives a very low R core value. And we also have a power law at a large radii. And we assume that Heisenstadt equilibrium holds. Okay, and it seems to be that initial tests we performed against realistic ICM simulations show that our model can reproduce these cluster profiles and also return the global properties out to large radii. But it is interesting to note that the isothermal beta model doesn't seem to do too badly for these sort of observations at large scales, but it doesn't reproduce these observed profiles. And end on a note, the next talk will be actually on real data, so from CBI. Okay, thank you very much. Oh, right, sorry, yes, F.
Uh-huh. It starts with a cosmological value of 0.18, I take it. At 0.8 of that, partly goes into the stars and partly gets picked out of the cluster.
In the simulations? So you're saying the gas cools. Well, that's just the radial plot of the F gas as a function of radius, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand the question, sorry.
That's not the universal value.
Well, I don't know. I mean that was what was in the simulation. Yeah. No, I don't. I don't think so. I think that's just what falls out of the simulation. I mean, you know, clusters do occasionally have low F gas values, right? I mean, they have missing baryons, right? I mean, they do have. It doesn't necessarily have to converge to the cosmological value at large radii.
It's certainly consistent with yeah. The
0.7
going in and 40% going into stars.
Yeah.
Well,
perhaps. I mean, yes.
How much goes into stars? How much is being picked up?
I don't think
it's definitely in the simulation, but that's 0.1.
Yeah.
Energy that you guess have.
That's what we
answer. We have 0.18. Why do they have 0.1? Is it because all of the vessels kicked out into the IGN or half of it from the start?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the simulations are from 2004.
So,
well, the paper is 2004, so quickly.
Well, we're probably not going to settle what the simulations have.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of.
So, do you have prospects for putting in things like Jurgen support?
Yeah, I mean, we could do. Definitely. I'm open to suggestions. So.